Most of us were coached at our earliest age to say thank you. Courtesy, our parents taught us, is a virtue to be exercised through modest expressions of gratitude. In today's world, however, simple gestures of respect are often overlooked. And today on Insight for Living, we have the privilege of listening to a message originally delivered during Thanksgiving season to an audience of seminary students in training for full-time vocational service. Given this opportunity to speak at Dallas Theological Seminary, Chuck decided to reinforce the value of sustaining an attitude of gratitude.
Thank you for being here. I'm always honored to be invited to speak. And it's not an easy thing to decide on what to talk on when you come to the chapel here. I know you recently heard from Charles Stanley. Is that correct? Charles Stanley was here? Great. Never forget the lady who finished the day at our church. We had had our worship service, and she came down with one of Dr. Stanley's books, and she said, "I want to thank you, Dr. Stanley, for that message today." She said, I'm very grateful, and I wonder if you'd sign your book." I said, "I'll be glad to." So I signed it. Had to remember Charles, not Andy Stanley, so I wrote Charles Stanley. And she said, "Oh, thank you. I'll treasure this the rest of my..." She walked out just so grateful that she had been there to hear Dr. Charles Stanley speak that. Who cares, you know? This is Well, the way we started off today was perfect for what I want to talk on, because I want to talk to you about sustaining the spirit of a heart of gratitude. That's what's on my mind today. And I believe in it wholeheartedly. In fact, I think an attitude of gratitude is one of the most contagious of all attitudes we can sustain. And being around a person who is grateful and frequently uses those two marvelous words, thank you, often, is just a therapy. They make us smile. They lift our spirits. They really do change our environment within and around us. They impact others. Can be as simple as a little five-year-old boy who was telling his mother that he was even thankful that he wears glasses. And she wanted to know, "Why are you thankful for that?" And his answer was quick and simple. He said, "It keeps the boys from hitting me and keeps the girls from kissing me." So glasses work. All of that's going to change, buddy, before too long. So you're in for a surprise. I remember the words of the man who wrote, "He who forgets the language of gratitude can never be on speaking terms with happiness." Even more profound are the words of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who wrote, "In ordinary life, we hardly realize that we receive a great deal more than we give. And it is only with gratitude that life becomes rich." Love that line. It's only with gratitude life becomes rich. It is very easy to overestimate the importance of our own achievements in comparison to what we owe others. I have to add along with that the flip side of the same coin, and that is that there is nothing more offensive or oppressive than an attitude of ingratitude, which is a characteristic of our age. That shouldn't surprise us. Paul writes of it in Romans 1 just as much as in the last piece that he wrote when he wrote Timothy. In Romans 1, he writes of the of the magnificence of God's artwork in the natural realm. We call it here at the seminary general revelation. And in spite of God writing his glory across the skies, which mankind is able to read every day of our lives, still he remains ungrateful. Still there's an attitude of ingratitude. When I look at Paul's words in 2 Timothy 3, and I read of the savage days in which we live, that's the way one of my mentors used to handle the word difficult in verse 1 of 2 Timothy 3. In the last days, difficult or savage times will come. And then he begins from there through verse 8 to describe the times in which we live, when men and women will be lovers of money and boastful and arrogant and revilers and disobedient to parents. And in the middle of all of it, he mentions ungrateful, along with unholy, along with unforgiving, ungrateful. The spirit of thanksgiving needs to remain. And I hope it is remaining. I hope you today have not relegated that spirit of gratitude to a holiday and left it there and failed to bring it into today, tomorrow, next week, the week of finals, the week beyond finals, next semester, into your ministry. As I'll tell you, if a spirit of ingratitude grips you strong enough and long enough, you'll change. And your ministry will change. And it won't take a really insightful person to know that you're difficult to be around. Because ungrateful people repel others. Now, why are we so ungrateful? Why are our times marked by such ingratitude, as Paul mentions in Romans and in 2 Timothy and in so many other places? At the risk of being simplistic in my analysis, I think a major reason is pride. Proud people don't say thank you. They don't think thank you. Pride is, of course, filled with self. And when that is true, we hold back our thank you to others because we're so self-important. I'll tell you who will say thank you and do so frequently. Humble people, broken people, crushed, contrite people are quick to say thank you, thank you. Thank you for the little things. Thank you for the unexpected things. Paul writes to his friends in Thessalonica, I'm turning there for the rest of my time with you, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Toward the end of that letter, there's sort of a staccato set of statements. They're brief, and he punches them out. When I was taking oboe in high school, and Mr. Volani, who had the chair of first chair of oboe in the Houston Symphony, would come. They made house calls in those days, and he was my teacher. I loved Mr. Volani, and as I would play duets with him, I sometimes couldn't continue. He was so good. And I was so bad that it hardly blended. But we did a couple of duets that worked beautifully, and I on occasion would stop. And I would just look at him and I would say, you know, how do you do it? How can you play so well all the time? Of course, he made his own reeds, and he'd been playing since he was just a little boy and from another country, had come over and, of all things, had worked his way into the symphony. And when we get to those places that were staccato, he would say to me, "Punch it out, punch it out. Put your tongue on that reed and punch out those notes." That's what Paul does at the end of this letter. He punches out these statements, including the shortest verse in the entire Greek New Testament. It isn't "Jesus wept." We'll get to it in a moment. But he begins at verse 12 by reminding us to be grateful for, in this case, in our context, a body of people who pour themselves into your lives, and that would be the faculty of this school. So let's have them in mind as I punch out this 12th verse with you. "We request of you, brothers and sisters, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction." Appreciate them, he goes on, "and that you esteem them very highly in love because of their work." Isn't that great? Don't let this semester pass without pausing with each one of your profs for at least a few seconds to look them in the eye or with your own hand. Not an email, that's a cheap way to write a thank you. Do it by hand, you who still have some kind of penmanship left. All of us starting to write like physicians, it looks these days. But if you're still cultivating your penmanship, write it in your own hand and say it in a fresh, creative way, specifically naming what particular thing stands out in that particular teacher that has meant much to you. Express your appreciation. "I am still thanking my profs." And most of them aren't left. But those who are, it is not uncommon when I see them to thank them again for teaching me what they taught me. Which was more than an ability to handle the biblical text. It was a touch. I'm kind of like the difference between a piano player and a pianist. It's touch. Great profs help you with touch in lives and touch with the text. And those who work with you in the skill of communicating, they help you do that better. And I'm honest to this day when I preach, I think I learned that technique from that particular person. I think he's gone now, but I think, thank you, Lord, for the privilege of rubbing up next to him and sitting in his home in a class of 8 individuals as he poured into us some techniques on communication that I still use. And I esteem him very highly in love. And sometime a prof has to reprove and thank him for that. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy, Proverbs 27:6. I've always loved the story that my homiletics prof told us, that he had a young man that was convinced he had the gift of preaching, and he didn't. He just couldn't preach as well out of a paper bag, and he just was convinced he should preach, and his mother was convinced he should preach, and his grandmother was convinced he should preach, and the prof just did his best to endure it. And finally, by the third year, which was a particular year when we came to terms with some of these things, he just told a young man, "Look, you just don't have the gift of preaching." That takes guts to say that to a young man. He said, "Oh, yes, I do." He said, "Well, okay." The prof said, "Then let me put it this way. Nobody I know has the gift of listening to you." So that worked. And as I recall, he didn't go into a preaching ministry, and he went into a successful ministry. I'm not going to tell you what it is because you'll laugh, but thankfully he didn't go into the pulpit, and shouldn't have. Not everybody ought to be in a pulpit to carry out their ministry. We have a prof to thank for telling him. And that's a tough part of your job. Keep telling them. Keep telling the truth so that we hear it and we thank you for it. And so let's just make the concentric circles go a little broader, and let's include now our family members. Look at the end of verse 13. Live in peace with each other. We urge you, here's another one of those little staccato moments. We urge you, admonish the unruly. You have to do that sometime in a family. Encourage the faint-hearted. Help the weak. Be patient with everyone. Be patient with everyone. And then the circle broadens with friends and with others in life. See that no one repays another with evil for evil, but always seek after that which is good for one another and for all people. And then begins a real brief statement. Rejoice always. There's the shortest verse. Shortest in all the Bible, but what a grand command. I want to be around people like that. I want to be around those that are finding joy in life in spite of their circumstances. And here's another one. Pray without ceasing. It's the idea of a hacking cough. Pray in that kind of consistency. Pray continually, constantly. Prayer on your heart. Prayer on your lips. Prayer for specific individuals, specific needs. And here we are. In everything, give thanks, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. This has reference to every circumstance. Every circumstance. There's not one that he doesn't include. In your circumstances, today, be thankful, grateful. I wrote a piece for our board of directors at Insight for Living. And I want to read it to you. I don't usually do this, but I want to do it today. It has everything to do with being a thankful person. And I'll try to keep it interesting, though I'm reading what I'm sharing with you. I'll never forget the day, even though I was only 10 years old. It was a Wednesday. It was the day before Thanksgiving. I was standing ramrod straight next to my desk in South Maid Elementary School, hand over my heart, as we were together as students pledging our allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, which we did every morning. Hanging by the flag that was draped before us in the class was a large framed picture of our president, who was gripped with polio when he was younger, but he had a big smiling face, and it was familiar to all of us because he's a very popular president. And I had to remind myself that he had polio because it was never emphasized and he never referred to it. There he stood smiling at the class as we pledged allegiance. Following our pledge, our teacher, as she had always done, paused to pray. So she bowed her in prayer, and we bowed with her. And I noticed it wasn't very long before her voice broke. I've never heard our teacher cry. And before long, she just couldn't continue. And she just had heaves of sobbing, and my heart went out to her, whatever it was. I didn't know what it was till later. She was in deep grief. We were, of course, in a double war on each side of our country. It was a pretty bleak time, and she had lost her husband on the shores of Normandy. It was 1944, and she was going on without him. And this was her first Thanksgiving without him. And her heart was breaking. This brave woman refused to allow her grief to eclipse the significance of giving thanks. So she finally was able to get hold of her emotions, and she returned to thanking God for a number of things. I was lost in sympathy for her and a little boy's pity for his teacher when I was walking home that crisp November afternoon in East Houston. And that was the day I really fell in love with Thanksgiving. I've loved it ever since. My all-time favorite holiday. And I'll tell you why momentarily. I stopped on the way home and I thank God for my teacher, for our school, for my friends, for my church, for my family, for my country. I still remember as a little boy swearing before the Lord that if I ever was able to do so, I would defend our country. And I didn't understand fully all that that meant, but I remember 13 years later when I had the privilege, having earned the right to wear the dress blues, wearing the uniform of the Marine Corps and standing and pledging allegiance to the flag, and more often than not, saluting it as it was raised and lowered each morning and evening on the island of Okinawa, as I was 8,000 miles away from home. It's interesting how on those occasions, I would remember my 10-year-old experience and my teacher. And to this day, I remember her. Thanksgiving puts steel in our bones. It reminds us of our enviable, magnificent heritage.
Chuck Swindoll is talking about sustaining an attitude of gratitude. This is message number 3 in a brand new 6-part series called Straight Talk for Seminary Students. You're listening to Insight for Living. To learn more about this ministry, visit us online at insightworld.org. There's much more from this presentation we want you to hear, and the next edition of Insight for Living will feature the remainder. Of course, if you've missed any portion of this series and want to catch up, you can hear Chuck's teaching on our mobile app or simply listen to the audio right from our website. All these features are explained at insight.org/connect. As an additional resource, there's a free CD message we're prepared to send you. Chuck delivered a message called This Is No Time for Wimps, and the title requires little explanation. We're confident you'll enjoy this bold message on courage, and it's a great way to introduce a friend to Chuck's teaching as well. To have the CD sent directly to your home, go to insight.org/offer. This offer is valid in the United States only. Again, it's called This Is No Time for Wimps. And then as God prompts you to link arms with Insight for Living as a financial partner, we encourage you to become a monthly companion. This is one of the best ways to leverage your investment as you sign up to give a donation every month. You set the amount that's best for you, and we'll take care of the rest. To become a monthly companion today, give us a call. If you're listening in the United States, dial 1-800-772-8888. Or you can sign up online at insight.org/monthly companion. The number again, if you're listening in the U.S., is 1-800-772-8888. To send a link for today's program to a friend, go to insight.org.
Imagine what it would be like to share communion at the Garden Tomb near Jerusalem. Or picture yourself floating in a boat on the calm, scenic Sea of Galilee.
Isn't it time you saw the Holy Land? Join Chuck and Cynthia Swindoll on the Insight for Living Ministries Israel Tour, March 1st through 12th, 2020.
Whether it's your first time or your fifth or sixth time, you will love traveling with newfound friends and family who share a similar love and respect for the land of Israel.
You have lots of choices, but there's only one tour with Chuck Swindoll and Insight for Living Ministries.
You'll learn a lot, yes, but this isn't an academic trip. We squeeze every possible opportunity to ensure your encounters in the Holy Land include quiet moments just between you and the Savior.
Join us March 1st through 12th, 2020, by calling 888-447-0444. That's 888-447-0444. Or visit us online at insight.org/events. The Insight for Living Tour to Israel is paid for and made possible by only those who choose to attend. Chuck Swindoll continues his message about sustaining an attitude of gratitude Friday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Sustaining an Attitude of Gratitude, was copyrighted in 2018 and 2019, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2019 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.